Oh, I didn't click. Okay, let us get on with sheet 20. As I said to you at the beginning, I think it's important, if only for one session, and I don't know when next time in your life is that you're going to deal with this topic, possibly many times, possibly never, but it's important at least once to get a little bit of an understanding of what does it mean, these Yud Gimel Midos Sha'atera Nidreshes Bahem. The first thing is, don't get them confused with the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim. Often people do. There are a few 13s in Judaism. It seems to be a bit of a Jewish number. There are obviously Bar Mitzvah is 13, and there are Yud Gimel Ikrim of the Rambam and the Yud Gimel Midos Sha'atera Nidreshes Bahem. What exactly the relevance of the number 13 is not entirely clear, but nevertheless we have this list of 13 here. I'm not going to go through them all, but just to make a point at the very beginning that they clearly divide up into three groups. If you just look at the first page and just turn it this way round, I brought this list here because it's very helpful, but the first three, and again, what are these? These are, as I said to you before, the way that droshes work. Second, where's my thingy, Bob? Way, for the benefit of those girls who weren't here before, the way that a drasha works is you have a verse in the Torah, that's a verse in the Torah, you apply one of these midot. Think of it as a formula, you know? So it's a formula, obviously it's not E equals MC squared, but it's a formula that analyzes the pasuk and you generate a new halakha. So these 13 midos, and there are more than 13, and last time we looked at a whole bunch of them that were not part of the Yud Gimel midos, the word et comes to include, the word rak comes to exclude, the word ach comes to exclude, there's lots and lots and lots of them. We saw the word min comes to exclude, but these 13 divide into three groups. The first of them are comparing inyanim, okay, comparisons between inyanim, kal v'chomer, gezeira shava, and binyan av, which we'll look at in more detail in a minute. The next four deal with the connection between klal and prat. Klal, of course, means a general principle. Prat means a specific principle.
Wait, what was the fafalia?
It says here, hashva'ot shnei inyanim, two ideas, two concepts being compared, like kal v'chomer, which we'll talk about in a minute, like an a fortiori rule. Klal and prat. A klal is a general principle. A prat, if you're English, it means something a bit different, but a prat is a specific, okay? A prat is a specific issue, okay? And we see sometimes in the psukim that... I'll tell you afterwards. It's not rude. If you look in the psukim, sometimes, as we'll see examples, it gives a general, inclusive, all-inclusive principle in the pasuk, and then it specifies certain things. A prat means in Hebrew a specific.
Right.
And the last three or four here, yachas laklal yotzim min haklal, and you can look at this list on your own and see how they all work. And the Art Scroll Siddur, by the way, the Art Scroll Siddur on this little bit of the Yud Gimel Midos Sha'atera Nidreshes Bahem has a very good explanation in English on how they all work with each other. And I'm not going to go through them all now. There are actually four according to this, okay? As I said, the first is two comparing ideas. The second is klal and prat. The third also is the comparison between things that are excluded from the klal. They're all real connections within klal and prat. I'm not going to go into them in great detail. And the last two, he says, Hezbe inyan echad al pi inyan acher, explaining one inyan by connection to another inyan. Again, I recommend that if you're interested in what all of these 13 specifically do, we're going to look at five or six of them today. You look in the Art Scroll Siddur, look at the examples they bring, and you'll see how that works. The truth is that actually, if you go through Shas, if you go through the Gemara, the Yud Gimel Midos of Rabbi Yishmael aren't that commonly used. Some of them are more than others. Kal v'chomer is all over the place. Gezeira Shava is quite common. But some of them are not that common. And therefore, I think if you actually looked at the droshes as a whole, you would find that droshes other than the Yud Gimel Midos of Rabbi Yishmael are more commonly used, like et and ach and rak and things like that, and just looking at the psukim, than these. But I want to look at some of them because it's important that you understand them, and there's some very interesting gemaras that come up in the process. Have a look, please, over the page on number two. You'd see kal v'chomer. Kal v'chomer is used in every legal system. In English, or rather Latin, it's a fortiori, something like that. Meaning, as you often say, all the more so, if something is the case, if you have a chumrah in the case of a lenient area in halacha, then kal v'chomer, then the chumrah will apply in a strict area. You understand that?
It's how much more so.
Yeah, but anyone can say the words, how much more so. I need you to understand how it works. Meaning, if someone says, what's a kal v'chomer, don't just say how much more so. Give me an example of a kal v'chomer.
No, because we're saying it in Latin, so I'm saying it in English.
I understand. But again, the words, how much more so, you have to be able to think of an example.
But when you think of a fortiori, you think of an example.
So I'm giving you examples. If a chumrah applies in a lenient area, for example, let's take Shabbos and Yonsef. Which is stricter, Shabbos or Yom Tov, normally?
Oh, Shabbos.
Shabbos. Right, why?
Because you're not
allowed to do some of the Torah. Why is Shabbos stricter?
You have more things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos than Yom Tov.
Why?
Yom Tov, you can
do it. Oh, that's every week.
That's true. Yom Kippur is only once a year and it's stricter than Yom Tov, so that's not obviously a reason for it to be stricter. Just give me a halachic answer, yes. That's a nice answer, although the Aseret HaDibros doesn't necessarily make it stronger than anything else. It's Chayiv Kores. Shabbos is Chayiv Kores. It's one of the 36 Chayiv Kores, whereas Yom Tov is not. Therefore, Shabbos is usually stricter than Yom Tov. I understand, but I didn't ask you about Pesach, but not. No, Pesach Yom Tov isn't. It's only the Chometz Seder that Pesach is. Yes, correct. Now,
So you're saying if you keep Yom Tov, but you don't keep Yom Tov?
Therefore, if there's a Chumrah in Yom Tov,
Kal
v'chomer applies in Shabbos. And if there's a Kula in Shabbos, then you would have thought Kal v'chomer applies in Yom Tov. Okay? That's how a Kal v'chomer works. We learn it out from the Psukim. Look at number one. I hope you got this. It wasn't so easy. V'yom HaShem Moshe. Okay, God says to Moshe, what's the context here? Miriam has just spoken Lashon Hara about Moshe. She had Tzaras. Okay? V'avia yarok yarok b'faneha. If her father had spat in front of her, meaning if she'd insulted her father and caused her father to reject her. Haloi tikalem shivat yamim tisager. Okay? If her father had insulted her, would she not be, okay, isolated, if you like, for 7 days? Is that not the case? So who'd she insulted? She'd insulted Hashem, she'd insulted Moshe. So, kal v'chomer, if she insulted her father, she'd be put away for 7 days. So kal v'chomer, if she insulted Hashem, she should for sure be put away for 7 days. But tisagei Miriam mechutz lemachaneh, shiva shamim, v'ha'am lo nisa'al, etc., etc., etc. Meaning it's a straight kal v'chomer. If she'd only insulted her father, she should be insulted, she should be, if you like, isolated.
But she didn't insult her father.
No, exactly, she insulted God.
By insulting Moshe.
Right, but she basically turned around and she said that Moshe is not special. There's nothing special about Moshe's Nevuah. Moshe's Nevuah is the same as our Nevuahs. And therefore, it's a straightforward Kal v'chomer.
Where does it say in text that if she would have insulted her father, she would have been...
It says that. It says, Okay?
It's like, if she
did
her father...
Had she insulted her father, she would have been put away for 7 days, as it were. So, it says then, Tisager Shivat Yamim, so she let her be put away for 7 days. And only afterwards she can join the camp. And that's what they did with her. Now, let me ask you a question. Why can't I learn if she insulted Moshe? If she insulted her father, she should be away for 7 days. So if she insulted God, she should be away for 14 days. Why is that not a kal v'chomer? Yeah?
Because it's more of a sin. So yeah, of course she should be away. Like, 14 days would make... It's more of a sin than from...
If she would have insulted her father, she would have gotten 7 days.
And she would have insulted Hashem, and you said she would have been put away for 14 days. How are you deriving that from insulting your father at all? Because... It's a different case.
It's a different punishment. Meaning, let's translate it into an example that I sometimes give. If two very overweight men sat on a bench and the bench collapsed, okay? Then if three very overweight men sat on the same bench, would that bench collapse?
Yes.
How much more so?
It would collapse.
But then if I asked you, if three very overweight men sat on a bigger bench, would that collapse?
Not for sure.
So that you don't know. That you can't say. There's no kal v'chomer there. Because you changed the bench. And that's a classic way, by the way, when you're learning Gemara, a classic way of slogging up a kal v'chomer. What do I mean by slogging up?
Bringing up.
Slogging up means kicking out. in yeshiva kind of speak. A classic way of slogging up a Kal V'chomer is you turn around and you say, no, the case is a different case. You can learn a Kal V'chomer from Moshe to God. Moshe is lower, God is higher, or her father rather is lower and God is higher. So if 7 days for her father, Kal V'chomer, 7 days for God. But you can't learn 7 days for her father, Kal V'chomer, 14 days for God, because that's a different case. It's like making the bench bigger. Fine. We also see a Kal V'chomer clearly with Moshe and Paro. Look in number two. This is a very easy Kal V'chomer. Hey, Bnei Israel, lo shamu elai. The Jewish people aren't listening to me. Eich yishma eini Paro. How is God going to listen? How is Paro going to listen to me? Vani aros vasai. Meaning, if the Jews won't listen to me and I tell them that we're leaving Egypt, then Kal V'chomer Paro. It's a straightforward Kal V'chomer. You see from the Psukim that Kal V'chomer is used as a principle both in the Psukim and certainly by Chazal. And I brought you this example with Psachim. This is a classic, like I said about Shabbos before. This is a case of are you allowed to do the Korban Pesach on Shabbos? That's the Shaila here. And you'll see from the story that comes up soon, that's the whole story with Hillel. Are you allowed to do the Korban Pesach on Shabbos? So the Gemara says here, number three, Kal V'chomer, who is a Kal V'chomer? Understand the Kal V'chomer. Ma Tomid, if a Korban Tomid, what's the Korban Tomid?
The one you have to do every day.
Every day. She'ain oinish kares. There's no kares associated with the Korban Tomid. Yeah, if you don't do the Korban Tomid, there's no chi of kares. Doiches a Shabbos. And yet it still overrides Shabbos. Meaning, we do the Korban Tomid on Shabbos. Pesach, the Korban Pesach. She'ainish kares, which if you don't do Korban Pesach, there's a kares, so it's stricter than Tomid. Ein odin, isn't it the case? All the more so. She'doiches a Shabbos. It'll push aside Shabbos. Everyone clear on the Kal V'chomer?
Yes.
Kal V'chomer is just pure logic. That's what we're going to see later on, that anyone can learn a Kal V'chomer for themselves. You don't need a Masorah, you don't need to know it from Sinai. If you're going through the Gemara and analysing the cases and the droshes, anyone can make a Kal V'chomer in Chazal, and that Kal V'chomer, if it holds logically, great. If you can knock it down, also great, you can knock it down. But if it holds, it holds. It's straightforward logic. Yes, Joy?
Didn't we say previously that you can't punish
in ancient minhadin? That's a technicality in terms of giving a punishment in a beis din, where but the halacha would for sure apply.
So if you can't punish anyone based on this Kal V'chomer, then what is its purpose?
That I know that if you're chayav for something, you could have a personal chiyuv based on a Kal V'chomer. And I could learn halachas out based on a Kal V'chomer. What do I have to do? What do I not have to do? It's a technical halacha in a beis din that we can't extend an einish in beis din based on a Kal V'chomer. But we can, say that you're chayv. If this is a halacha on Yom Tov, all the more so this is chayv on Shabbos. Yes?
What does it have to do with Moshe not wanting to go talk to Pharaoh?
Again, who's more likely to listen to Moshe when he says, let's leave Egypt? Pharaoh or the Jewish people? And did they?
No.
So Pharaoh. So Moshe says, if the Jewish people already, who should want to leave Egypt, don't want to leave Egypt, how's Pharaoh going
to
say it?
Wasn't it also because he was list? He had list. He said they're not listening to me.
But that's
yeah.
Another level. And it's not clear that he had a list anyway. The Kal V'chomer works without the whole issue of Aros Vasai. Yeah. Now, Masha Enke. Okay, so you'll learn the Rashbam there.
Right, of course. We have to
Masha Enke, that's not the case. With a Gezeirah Shava. A Gezeirah Shava, what is a Gezeirah Shava? What is a Gezeirah Shava? Someone tell me. Not just an inference.
If let's say you see a word used in context somewhere, you see used in context somewhere else, you can basically infer from the other context, you can use it for a law or a rule.
So, Gezeirah Shava is not a logical principle. I see a word in a posuk, I see a word in a different posuk, and some kind of magical line can, like a wormhole, if you're into sci-fi. Some behind the text, some kind of wormhole, you're looking at me, I'm just completely blank. But some links the two of them. There's some kind of connection between the two of them. And even though there doesn't seem to be an obvious reason why these two words are connected, and this word may appear in 100 places in the Torah, nevertheless, these two are connected. Look at the classic example of a Gezeirah Shava. Look at a second in number 7. And then we'll go back to number 4, 5, and 6. When it comes to marrying, this is this week's parsha, it comes out very nicely. Ha'isha nikneis bekesef. A woman can have a kinyan in order to get married.
What is that?
By kesef. Number 7.
What's a kinyan?
What's a kinyan? Tell me what a kinyan is.
Buying.
It doesn't mean buying something necessarily, yes.
A lot of acquisition.
I don't like the word acquisition.
It's a contract.
It's a contract, meaning when a husband and a wife do a kinyan under the chuppah, it's very clear in halacha that nobody buys anybody.
I'm not saying buy, I'm saying acquisition. The word
well, acquisition is just a fancy word. Acquisition is just a fancy word for buy.
Yeah, it's like
when you acquire something, it means you own it. A kinyan is like this. A kinyan is a change of contractual status. A kinyan is a change of contractual status. Meaning, ladies, there's too much talking today. I can't override people talking. Even though you're talking about good things, I still can't talk over you, okay? A kinyan is where something changes status, meaning if I go to a shop and buy something, that thing was previously owned by this, by Walmart, and now it's owned by me. Okay, that was a kinyan. But if I stand under the chuppah and I agree to my wife to be responsible for this, that, and the other, and she agrees with me to be responsible for A, B, and C, that's also a kinyan. Because I now owe her this, she now owes me that. That's also a change of contractual status. No one bought anybody. No, don't have the idea that in Jewish law the man buys the wife under the chuppah. That's ridiculous. He can't sell her to anybody. You know, you can't sell your wife. You don't own your wife. And you don't own your husband either, by the way. So just make sure you understand that. What you did do under the chuppah is you did a kinyan, meaning you changed status. I now owe her things, she owes me things, there are things I now can't do, the things that she now can't do, etc. So where do we learn the idea that you can make a kinyan with kesef? And this is what we do under the chuppah. We make a kinyan with kesef. Your husband will give you, well, he won't be your husband yet, your husband-to-be will give you something worth money. The minhag is to use a ring, but you could give a can of Coke if you like. You know, don't try that one because it'll look really weird under the chuppah. Harry at Makadesh Lee with this can of Coke. Yes. Yes?
The reason why you can do it with kesef is because of.
You're ruining the class!
One second. Well, it was a rhetorical question, really. Because I'm about to read it. Because I know you know, because we just learnt it. Okay? But you can say it anyway, Hannah, because I don't want to cut you off.
So.
Go on, tell me what you're going to say.
They make a
Zeir Shalom Kusadei Ephron. Oh, so what's Zeir Ephron? How does that work?
When Abraham bought Maram Machpelah from Ephron, it's a half.
Right.
How he made an acquisition.
Right. There he did buy it. And he uses the word kach. And when it comes to getting married, it also strangely uses the word kach. Let's read the source. Ha'isha niknes b'kesef. B'kesef minalan. How do I know, source number 7, that you can really do a kinyan under the chuppah with kesef? Meaning there are different ways to do a kinyan. You can do a kinyan with a star. You can write a document, which we don't do. The ksuba is not a star of a kinyan for the chuppah. You can do kinyan with beer, meaning they actually have marital sexual relations with each other. That's also a kinyan. We don't use those kinyan to effect marriage. We use now kesef, meaning he gives her something of monetary value. It says gemar kicha kicha mistei afon. We learn the word kach kach. Ksiv hach, it says over there in marriage, ki yikach ish isha, when a man takes a woman. Now again, it's a strange word. You don't throw her over your shoulder like Western style and walk off into the sunset. Yeah? Uksiv hasam, and it says over here with Ephron, this week's parsha, Natati kesef hasadeh. I've given you the money, kach mimenu, take it. So again, something links those words. Now, Miral Lechama said to me, but the word kach is used 1,000 times all over the Torah. What's magic about this one and this one that they somehow, all the halachas of kinyan kesef are learned from there over to here? Why not over there? Why not over here? Why not over there? The answer is, there's a Masorah. For Gezeirah Shava, you need a Masorah. Otherwise, you could just do anything with anything. And the whole Torah would be linked to everything in a way which completely undermines everything, which we'll see soon. Yes?
Can you just give a written definition of
Gezeirah
Shava?
See, Gezeirah Shava... A Gezeirah Shava means an equal... The word gezeirah here doesn't mean...
Why don't you just give the example of the first page?
No, but she's asking for a definition. Gezeirah here doesn't mean like a decree. It doesn't really mean decree here. Gezeirah is also used in like verb definitions and declinations and all declensions and all that kind of stuff. Not making much sense. But gezeirah shava means like an equal association.
Okay.
And let's say it like this, an equal association. For example, we learn many of the halachas of blowing the shofar of Rosh Hashanah from blowing the shofar on Yovel, the Yovel year. Because it uses the same words in the Psukim, so we learn halachas from there, so the halachas from here, and we end up with two sets of halachas which are now linked by this kind of invisible, behind-the-scenes wormhole. Yes?
Okay.
Sorry, I was actually talking to Michal, but you can come up and go afterwards. Yes.
I just I didn't really understand what you were saying before.
Is the reason that we can use Gezeirah Shavah, is that only because of Minasara from Yes. But I knew which ones were allowed to be late. Yes. Or at least they had a Masorah. Whether it's from Sinon is a good question, but they had a Masorah. They can't just make up their own Gezeirah Shavahs.
And that's the Gezeirah Shavah is the only one that needs Masorah.
Oh, well, that's sources 9 and 10, which we'll come to in a minute. Yes.
So if you need a Masorah for it, then essentially the only reason it is connected is because we have a Masorah.
Correct. Which is why it says in number 8, Ein Adam Dan Gezeirah Shavah Me'atzmo. You can't learn a Gezeirah Shavah on your own because it's not logical. You can learn a Kal V'chomer on your own, but you can't learn a Gezeirah Shavah on your own. El Kal V'chomer Dan Adam La'atzmo. A Kal V'chomer you can't learn on your own. There's a Machlokas Rashi Tosfos in 9 and 10 as to whether Rashi seems to indicate that it's only a Kal V'chomer that you can learn on your own, but all of the others you have to have a Masorah, whereas Tosfos in number 10 clearly says, actually no, it's the other way around. It's only Gezeirah Shavah that you need a Masorah, but all of the others you can learn for yourself.
I mean, so how is that a conflict if he says Kal V'chomer and
No, again, Rashi says that the only one you can learn on your own logically is Kal V'chomer, but all of the others you have to have some kind of Masorah for. And Tosfos comes around in number 10 and says, no, I don't understand that. You only need a Masorah for Gezeirah Shavah. You don't need a Masorah for the others. You only need a Masorah for Gezeirah Shavah. And that seems to be the way that people usually present it, the way that Tosfos explains it to here. And the truth is, there's a Rashi in Sukkah that seems to contradict this Rashi. Anyway, sorry, a Rashi somewhere else in... where's the other Rashi? Not in Sukkah. There's another Rashi somewhere else that contradicts this a little bit. But basically, people usually present it like this. You only need a Masorah for Gezeirah Shavah, but the others, you don't need a Masorah. They're more logical principles. And you see a beautiful example of this in this important case from history in number 11. I want to learn this story with you in number 11, because it's actually, it appears in a few places in Shas, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Tosefta, and it's the story of when Hillel appeared on the scene. So have a look with me in number 11, please. And you get some good examples of how all of these principles work. Remember, if you recall, that Hillel introduced seven of a subset, pretty much, of the 13, although Hekesh doesn't technically appear in the 13, but Hillel introduced these. Hillel lived, of course, when? When did Hillel live?
In the time of Tanaim.
Yes. End of Second Temple period. End of Second Temple period, he appears from Babel, and he saves the day. Have a look at number 11. Zo halacha nelma mizikne b'seira. This halacha was hidden from the B'nai B'seira. From the B'nai B'seira were the people who were in charge in Israel, in Yerushalayim, of the Sanhedrin. Pam achatz, it happened once, chal arba asa liyo Shabbos, the 14th of Nisan, fell on a Shabbos, v'loi haya yoidim in Pesach doches a Shabbos im lav. They weren't sure whether Pesach pushed off Shabbos or didn't. Meaning, can the people all do their Korban Pesach even though it's Shabbos? Or do they have to not do it today? Amru, they said, Yesh kam Bavli, there's a Babylonian here, Echad, the Hillel Shema, he's called Hillel. Shishim et Shemai v'Avtalion. Who was Shemai and Avtalion? Who was Shemai and Avtalion? Suggestions? They were also tonight. Shemai and Avtalion were the Av Beis Din and the Nasi from the generation before. This Hillel had learned under Shemai and Avtalion before he went off to Babel. Yodeh in Pesach Yodeh es Shabbos Imab. He'll know the answer to that question. So what did he do? Hitchel drosh lahen mehekesh v'kal v'chomer gzeirah shavah. He brought three proofs, all from droshes: a hekesh, a kal v'chomer, and a gzeirah shavah. Mehekesh, they said Mehekesh, Hail the Tamid Korban Tzibur. See if you can follow the logic. The Tamid is a Korban Tzibur. What's a Korban Tzibur?
Like a communal.
As opposed to?
A
private Korban. The Tamid is a Korban Tzibur. Or Pesach Korban Tzibur. And the Pesach is a communal offering. Okay? Ma Tamid Korban Tzibur, just like the Tamid, which is a communal offering, Doiches a Shabbos, pushes off Shabbos. Af Pesach Korban Tzibur, Doiches a Shabbos. So the Hekish basically says it's the same type of Korban. If this type of korban pushes off Shabbos, then so does that one. What's the kal v'chomer? So we saw. Ma'im tamid she'ein mechaimim alei tziyas v'koreis. Tamid has no koreis. Doicha es ha-Shabbos yedid. This is doicha Shabbos. Pesach chayavim es alei tziyas koreis. Pesach does have koreis. Ein adin, isn't it kal v'chomer the halacha she'yidcha es ha-Shabbos? And Gezeirah Shavah, what's the Gezeirah Shavah? Nema b'tamid, the word mo'ado, the tamid it says you have to do it b'mo'ado, in its appropriate time. The nema b'pesach, and it says in Pesach b'mo'ado, and this uses the same word, ma tamid nema b'mo'ado, doches a Shabbos, al Pesach, etc., etc. So it uses the word Mo'adot there and the word Mo'adot there. So again, this is a classic application of these Kavachayim, Gzeira Shavah, etc. In the end, they didn't believe him until eventually he brought a Masora and he said, I have a Masora from Shammai Bartalion. But you see the application of these drushes and Hillel being the person that really brought them in. Yes? A Hekesh is a connection between two things logically or in the Pesukim. Here the Hekesh is more like, he's saying, just like it's in this category of Korban, similarly this is the same category of Korban. Usually we would use the word Hekesh to mean that they're connected somehow close by in the Pesukim. But here it doesn't seem to mean this.
So like
it's a connection. A Hekesh literally means a connection.
Like, it's different from a Kavachomer because it's like,
what is different? Yes. Kavachomer is logic. It's pure logic. Hekesh means, here Hekesh is a logical connection. You're right. It's not a Kavachomer, one is not more than the other.
Okay.
It's saying this is this kind of Korban, this is this kind of Korban. You see that they're the same kind of Korban, and therefore they should have the same din. Yes? Again, yes, very simple. Korban Tomid pushes off Shabbos, and there's no Kores. Pesach, which has Kores, surely must have at least the same stricture, if not more. So if Korban Tomid, which is a lenient Korban, has the power to push off Shabbos, Pesach, which is a stronger korban, it has kareis, must for sure have a chomer.
Don't do it.
Yeah, correct.
Oh, right.
Now, what's a binyan av? What's a binyan av? It's a what?
A father in the example. That's just how I learned it.
A
father in the
example.
Halachic archetype.
Ooh, I like that. Did you make that up?
No, but I know.
A halachic archetype. Girls, please don't beat each other up. A halachic archetype. What's a halachic archetype? Please expound on that.
A halachic archetype is like applying a certain, like it's like falling under a certain category. It applies to like an archetype. It's a case.
It's a case which what?
It's a general principle.
What do
you buy from the text? Take it from one or a related text. It doesn't have to be the same exact.
I'm looking for something a bit more specific. Meaning, let me ask you a question. If the Pasuk teaches me a certain halacha, would I expect that halacha applies across the whole Chumash, or would I expect that only applies in this particular Pasuk? What would be more logical?
It should only apply that.
It should what?
Really?
Is that more logical?
I think it should be applied to that can be applied to one or two or more that are related to the text. I don't think that has to be completely random, but I think if it's a general principle that you could derive and relate it to other texts, I think that's fine.
Right. In other words, if the Chumash teaches me one thing in one place, surely I would expect that applies across the board rather than just applies in one place. Otherwise, it would have to teach me every halacha in every single case, again and again and again and again and again. How many times does it need to tell me? 613 times in each 613 minutes. The opinion Av assumes logically that if the Torah tells me a halacha, in this case the example is the word aid, okay? The word aid means to aid him. Wherever the word aid appears, the word aid is going to mean to aid him. Why? Because in the case in the Torah it says, Al pi shneim shnei aidim, or Al pi shloisha aidim yukum hadavar, okay? So it says the idea here, it has to be two aidim, not one aid. And the Gemara in Saita, which I gave you in number 14, says that since the word aid means two everywhere in the Torah, so by the case of the Sota, when it says the Sota is guilty, the case of the Sota I'm sure you're aware of. The case of the Sota is a woman who's been warned by her husband not to be secluded with a certain man. She's been secluded with that man, and there are witnesses that see her. That A, she's been warned, and B, she's been secluded, but now the Shaila is, did she or did she not have sexual relations with this man? And the Torah says that if we know for sure that she did, even though aid Einba, even though there's no witnesses, then she doesn't have to drink. So the question is, how do we know if there are no witnesses? So the Gemara clarifies, because aid doesn't mean witness, it means two witnesses. It means that even though there are not two witnesses there, if there's one witness, then we know that she doesn't have to drink. How do we know aid means two witnesses? Binyan av. Every time it says the word aid, it means two witnesses across the whole Torah. And therefore, in the case of the Sota, when it says aid ein ba, it means there aren't two, but there could be one, and then she doesn't have to drink. So again, it's a logical principle across the whole Torah that once we learn a case in one case, it applies across the board. Yes. No, you had a question? I thought you were just asking a question. Yes. That's in order for her to be chayv misa, meaning if a witness sees a woman committing adultery and she's going to be chayav misa, then she would have to tell her immediately before you do. Are you aware that what you're about to do is adultery and you're not allowed to do it? And she'd have to turn around and say, yes, and I don't care, etc. But this witness just saw through the window that there's some funny business going on between her and another fellow, and he's able to tell the court, and that's enough to stop her from being a sota. So what's the punishment? There's no punishment. She has to get divorced, and that's the end of that.
Wait, can you quickly say, what is it, the drinking thing? Is it the difference? She blows up, right? If she was, right, so that's Nita. That's current Nita. That's current death. That's Kari.
That's only she's guilty.
There's
though.
No story like that.
If she's not,
No, it's not Koris. Right, Koris is a spiritual thing, not a physical thing. Okay. Let's look at the last few examples.
They never really killed anyone, are
they? Okay, that's an interesting Shiloh. Was there ever a Sota? Was there ever not a Sota? That's an interesting question. Let's look at the last couple of questions, just so you understand logically. Klalu Pratukla. Look at number 15. Okay? What's a Klalu Pratukla? So look at the example, Ellie. Set a good example to your friends. Okay. Okay, number 15. Ki yiten ish el re'ehu. If a person gives something to their friend, like what? Chamor, like a donkey, or a shor, or an ox, or a seh, v'chol behema, or any kind of animal. So you see how that's a klal uprat uklal. If you give anything to your friend to look after, is a klal. Eat these things, a shor, or a seh, or a chamor, etc., is a prat. Kol behema is a klal, so the Gemara is going to say, oh, why does the Torah give a klal, and then a prat, and then a klal? It teaches us something specific. Look at number 16. The Tzna. Where's Nadiva, by the way? Okay, fine. I just noticed she wasn't here. The Tzna, the Tana Rabbana. Ki yiten ish al riehu is a klal. If you give anything to your friend, that's a klal. Chamor, or shor, or seh is a prat, is a specific thing. But kol behema lishmora, anything, any behema, chazar or klal, that's a klal again. Klal uprat or klal, so what's the deal with the klal uprat or klal? Again, you don't need to remember all of this. You just need to understand this is the methodology of how halacha is learned out by chazal. E atadan ela ke'ein haprat. So the din with the klal uprat klal is teaching us that the klal only applies to things which are the ke'ein haprat, the kind of thing that is defined by the individual. Ma prat meforash. What is the common denominator between these animals that are specified? The donkey and the ox and the sheep. Davar hamataltal. They're all movable property. Vegufa mama, which have intrinsic monetary value. Af kol dava matalta v'gufa mama. Similarly, this halacha of giving something with someone to look after and then being liable if it gets broken is only with dava hamataltel v'gufa mama, something which is movable, which has intrinsic value. Yatsa, which excludes karkaot, land. Land is not movable. Land is something different. She'ena matalta, which is not movable, and yatsa avadim shehuk shlekargos, and avadim which are connected halachically to land, always they have the same din. But yatsa shtaras, and it takes away, and it's a shtar is also excluded. She'af al pishem matalta, even though it's movable, ein begufa mama. Why does what's a shtar? A shtar is a note, like this. This here, okay, is a shtar. Why is this a shtar? Does this have intrinsic value? No, it's a piece of paper. What's it actually worth in terms of its intrinsic value? It's nothing. It's worth nothing. It's like almost nothing. But this has built into it a contract, which means that when I give this to somebody, and ultimately when they present this at the Bank of Israel, the Bank of Israel promises that they will give them 100 shekels worth of whatever it is for this thing. It's a contract. And therefore, this is what is excluded, if you like, by this potuk, because it's not like a seh or a shor or a chamor. So maybe the halacha is going to be different if I give someone money to look after as a shomer, maybe that's going to have a different din now than if I give them my tick, my bag, to look after as a shomer.
I wouldn't want you to deal with that stupid piece of paper. Let me just take that from you.
By the way, if you want to hear a fascinating case of somebody who was a shomer, two fascinating cases. One of the Avbeistins of Harnof once came to London and told us these two cases. Just 1 second, Michal, and see what you think of this in terms of a shomer. Somebody was asked to look after somebody's house, okay? And the things inside their house. Okay, so they're metaltalin and they're worth money, etc. So they're a shomer. So they said, look after the things in my house while I'm away on holiday. So they go, no problem. So while he was away on holiday, so the guy who was looking after his house popped his head round the door, and he saw that that the fridge was working, like the electricity was working, and things were going, and the motor was going. He said, "Well, it's a chaval because like the guy's away for a month. I'll just turn the fridge off." So he opened the fridge. He looked in the fridge. He saw there was nothing there, and he said, "Fine, I'll turn the fridge off." So he turned the fridge off. Another few days later, he came to the house to check up again because he was very keen and he wanted to do it right. And he, as soon as he opened the door, he realized what happened. There was a terrible stink in the house. And he realized that there was obviously some food that was going off. And he opened the fridge. And he said, Taka saw right at the back of the fridge, he could hardly see it, was a frozen chicken. He hadn't noticed it. And he turned the fridge off and the frozen chicken had gone bad. So he felt really bad. He threw out the frozen chicken, and he cleaned it. He cleaned it all out, and he put the. He bought a new frozen chicken, and he did it, and he turned it all on again. So the guy came back like a month later, and he said, "Was everything okay?" He says, "Everything's fine. Everything's fine. There was one little stupid thing I did. I turned off the fridge, and the food went bad. But I replaced the food. Replaced the fridge. Everything's fine." So the guy nearly faints on the floor because the frozen chicken at the back of the fridge was where he kept like $30,000 in a frozen chicken because it was a place that he didn't. No one ever was going to look, and the guy thrown his $30,000 in the garbage.
This is another book, what if?
Right, this is a case that happened. It's a case that was brought up in the basin in Aranov. Okay. Yeah, it's a real case. It's a real case. And the shaila was whether the shomer was liable, because he was liable for the chicken for sure. He had to look after the chicken, but was he liable for the fact there was $30,000 or whatever it was hidden inside the chicken? That's a good shaila. Because he didn't know it was there. Is he liable for something he wouldn't expect to be there? It's not normal that you'd have money stuck in a chicken. Mikhail, you had a question on this or something else? But let me come back to that in a minute.
How do you know that he actually had $30,000 in the chicken?
Oh, so that's a good question. How does he know he's not just saying that? But then let's say there are Aiden that yes, we know he keeps his $30,000 in the chicken. The second case he told us was the following, which is I think even funnier in some ways.
What happened?
What happened is a separate issue. I just want to give you the case.
No, you have to tell us.
I think he told us he wasn't chayv, but I'm not 100% sure. But the second case was very interesting. Was a guy asked an old lady to look after a briefcase full of money for him. She was Russian, he was Russian, and he said, okay, sounds a bit sketchy, but he said to her, I'm giving you this briefcase, it's got like $50,000 in, when I need it, I'm going to call you, and I'm going to send someone to pick it up. She goes, no problem, it was all done in Russian. So the woman's got the briefcase in the house, and the guy, like 2 or 3 weeks later, he calls her on the phone in Russian, and he says to her, hi, this is in Israel. He says to her, I need the case, have you got it? She goes, of course. So he goes, okay, I'm sending someone up for the money, okay? She goes, fine. Okay. So 2 minutes later, there's a ring on the doorbell, she opens the door, there's a guy, Israeli guy standing there, and he goes, Kesef. So she goes, fine, she gives him the case, and he says, Toda. And he walks out like this. And then 2 minutes later, the real guy turns up and says to her, I've come for the case. Of course, the first guy was just a collector coming for money. And what she did, in fact, is give him like a case of $50,000. Of course, they never found the guy who she gave the case to. Okay. The shaila was whether she, as a shomer, was liable for having given that case to the wrong guy and this, and it was because she didn't speak Hebrew, she only really spoke Russian. The guy said Kesef, you know, that's as much as she understood, etc. And again, I'm not sure exactly what the outcome was. I think again she wasn't liable, but it's a complicated halachic shaila, and you have to go into the whole. So shomerim is an interesting thing, but I just brought you this, and Michal has a question on it to show you that the halacha wants to learn out from the posse, the klal and the prat and the klal, what kind of things are included in the din of shmirah and what kind of things are not. Michal, your question?
Nowadays, because we don't know from this that if you lend someone a car, because that's movable.
Yes, there's definitely shmirah in a car, no question.
And then, from this one specifically, can you compare it to the animals?
Yeah, anything which has got intrinsic value and is movable property is included in this halacha, and a car for sure is included in this halacha as well.
I think you should tell, if something is so important to you, you should really say on the phone, like, only if he says to you the word, I'm blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I would do that.
Okay.
If it was so just going down on you, someone could be
a code word. Okay, I'm not getting into the exact case, but just be aware these things happen. Okay. Yes, Jessica. No, the prat qualifies the klal. Klal or prat or klal, the prat is coming to teach us that the only things included in the klal are things which have the same qualities as the prat. That's klal uprat.
Why
klal
twice?
Because klal uprat, if there's only a prat, it comes to exclude from the klal. You see the whole thing. Klal uprat or prat uklal are different. Again, look it up. I'm not getting to all of the exact. I put it on the front page. Here, klal uprat. Here, klal uprat, the law only applies to the prat. Meaning the klal doesn't apply at all. It's only the prat applies. Okay? So it's only this. Again, I don't want to get into all the technicalities because it's not that interesting for right now. But each of them works in a slightly different way. But it's logic. At the end of the day, there's a logic to it. It's not random. It's a logical process. Look at the last example here. Yes, Sarah.
Is gold or silver considered intrinsic value?
Yes, definitely. But a coin, is not. If you have a coin in your pocket, that's not got intrinsic value. It's a token.
Right. But I don't know the way.
I mean, it has value, but it's not the value that you give
it.
It
sounded like it was something only that you could borrow
from. No, this has value. This has value. These are all things. Whereas a contract, the thing itself has no value. Okay. It's what it can do with it. Right, let's just finish up with number 19, 20 and 21, and then I'll let you go for lunch. This is also quite well known as one of the Yud Gimel Midas, something which is learnt from its Inyan. Meaning, number 19, Lois Sirtzach. What does Lois Sirtzach mean?
Don't kill.
Lois Sinaf, don't commit adultery. Lois Signav means?
Don't steal.
Ah, but it doesn't. That's the whole point. Lois Signav doesn't mean don't steal. It means don't kidnap. How do I know? Because Lois Signav. Leitignoiv, it says in the Ten Commandments, don't steal, and then it says Leitignoivu later on. So what is the difference between Leitign and Leitignoivu? So have a look in 21, and we'll finish with this. Tan Rabbana. Leitignoiv, begoiniv nefashis akosim adabe. It's talking about stealing people. Maybe you're going to say begoniv nefashis or eina ela begoniv mammon. Maybe it's talking about stealing money. That's what most people think, but the do not steal means stealing money. So amar no seulamad mishloish esrei nidoi shatoru nidreshes behem. Go and learn from the 13 midos shatoru nidreshes behem. Davar halame miinyanai. One of those is something which is learned from its context. Context is important. But Markos of Madave, what are the psukim of do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not steal? What are they talking about? And the Foshas, they're all capital punishments. There's a capital punishment for murder, there's a capital punishment for adultery, and there's a capital punishment for stealing. Which is the stealing which has a capital punishment?
Stealing a person.
There's no capital punishment for stealing money. Similarly, the other one, loisignoivu, then it says loisignoivu begoniv mammon. That's talking about stealing money. Ta'oime begoniv mammon. How do you know it's stealing money? Eina ela begoniv nefashis. Maybe it's stealing people. Again, Amarit, it says tseul amad mishloish esrei midos shatoru nidreshes behem. Dava halame binyana mamakos of David. What is it talking about? The mammon. All of that pasuk in number 20 is talking about monetary issues. Afkan the mammon. And therefore, all of these principles and all of the principles of the Yud Gimel Midos and beyond all work on some kind of logic. And all I'm trying to get to, and again, I'm not trying to train you to be darshanim and to learn the psukim this way, but I do want you to be aware that when Chazal are doing the activity of drash, which is what these last two shirim have been about, and this is, I'm not going to go on after this about this, when Chazal are doing the activity of drash, there is a built-in deep logic to what they're doing. They are analysing, they are using midas, most of which have a logical basis, although I agree Gezeira Shava is a little bit less so. But once this logical basis is applied, it produces halacha. And why is this important for you to know? I'll tell you why, like I said last time, because the majority of the halachic system, says the Rambam, is based on drash. Where does halacha come from? How do I know all the things that I do on a daily basis? Vast amounts of them, a large proportion of them, are based on the idea of drash. Therefore, I think it's incumbent on you, it's a little bit at least, to know the process as to how drash works so that you understand where things are coming from. And again, when you're learning Gemara, and at the end of the day, you know, it's only really learning Gemara that gives you access to this on a sort of broader scale. When you're learning Gemara, you see on a page-by-page basis the process of drash at work. So those of you who are learning Gemara this year, which actually is most of the school, so probably in this room probably quite a lot of you are learning Gemara this year, keep your eyes open, and when you see a pasuk and Chazal doing something with a pasuk, See if you can work out what they're doing and how they're doing it, so that you begin to get inside the process of Drash, and therefore inside the minds of Chazal. Because it's when you start getting inside the minds of Chazal that you start developing a real kesha, a real relationship with what they're doing, and with them and with the Torah. Rav Soloveitchik, I'll end with this point. Rav Soloveitchik used to say that when he's learning Rashi, he feels like he's learning the Chavrusa with Rashi. Rashi is across the table from him, and he's learning with him. You can only get that if you actually get into the Kishkas, get into the actual, into the inner thinkings and the inner workings of the people you're learning with. And then not only you can have a relationship with me, and believe me when I say that Rabbi Akiva is brilliant, but you can actually have a relationship with Rabbi Akiva, as opposed to just me. I think this is very important in the concept of Emunas Chachomim, because you only gain Emunas Chachomim if you actually understand who the Chachomim are. And you can only understand that if you can actually start understanding their methodology, which is one of the reasons why I'm trying to introduce a little bit this to you. Okay, we'll finish there, and I wish you a good